Blog Talk Radio.
Hello? This is your host, Amelia Rose, and you're listening
Hello.
To Dr. Rose.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello?
Okay, I will buzz you guys in. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I did say that I'll buzz you in. I will let you know. You can hear me, right?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Okay, so I will let you know exactly when I need you to come in, okay?
Okay, very good.
Hello again, everyone. Sorry for that interruption there for a minute. This is your host, Amelia Rose, and you're listening to the Dr. Rose Show. If you're tuning in for the first time, the show airs on Mondays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the number to listen in live is 929-477-2779. That number again is 929-477-2779. Now, just in case you're unable to tune in live, you can always follow us on Facebook or on the internet. I also want to remind you that there are two other shows on our network, and we have Topics with Trish, which comes on at a new time, 10 a.m. Central Time, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and you have the two Nanas at noon on Wednesdays. So be sure to check out our weekly shows and leave your comments and questions on our Facebook page. The show tonight will go for about 45 minutes, and there will be a short break if necessary. And around 10 minutes before the show ends, we will have an opportunity for people to ask questions. Now, the topic tonight is immigration, what to believe. So if you have a friend who could benefit from the information tonight, this is your time to call that friend and have them listen in. Well, as far as we can see here, people are anxiously waiting to hear what our guest has to say this evening. And we have two seasoned guests who are ready to share their expertise with you. I'm going to bring them on in a little bit. Just to let you know that last week we did talk a lot about the history of immigration in the U.S., and if you wanted to miss an episode, that was the episode to miss, because tonight is the night you're going to have your questions answered. And hopefully we can clarify some of the chaos and misinformation that we have floating around out there in social media. Now, without holding on any longer, I'm going to bring on our two guests, attorney Maurice Maitland and attorney Lisa Sonsoda. I hope I haven't murdered your name. Are you guys hearing me? Hello?
Oh, yes.
Did I get your last name?
No, it's Lisa Sonsoda. It's fine. It works.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome to the show. I'm glad that you guys were able to join in this evening and share your expertise with us. And because I don't have bios on each person, I am going to give each of you a couple of minutes to tell us a little bit about yourself, your practice, your field of work, and how people can reach you if they need to after the show. So, Mr. Maitland, you want to go first?
Oh, sure. My name is Maurice Maitland. I'm a former clerk of the courts in Jamaica, and I'm a member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association for the past 10 years. And I practice social security law and immigration law. And I am delighted to be on your show for the benefit of immigrants. And how they can reach me at 347-346-0749, 347-346-0749, or mdmlawyer.com. Thanks.
Okay, and we'll have an opportunity for you to do that again before the show ends. Okay, Attorney Leah, you want to go?
Okay, my name is Priscilla Sutoso. People call me Leah. I've been an attorney about 15 years. I have published before with American Immigration Law Association, and now the current editor to the removal book, which is going to be published by the Immigration Law Daily, ILW.com, and I practice solely immigration law.
Okay.
My contact is 347-272-8288.
347-272-8288.
Thank you.
Okay. And again, we will have you guys share that before we end the show tonight. Now, you guys are in the business, the practice. I happen to interact with a lot of families and people who are impacted by our president's last executive order. And I am sure that you saw or read or heard of the chaos that occurred, and even today, although there's a new order out, we have people who are really distressed, fearful. They really don't know what end is up. And I'm hoping that this evening you'll be able to help some of our listeners to clarify some of all of that confusion. So what I want to do is I want to start with one of the common questions that have been asked to me by listeners. And again, I am leaving it up to both of you to determine who will answer the question, and you can always supplement what each other says. I'm not particular about that. I just need the information for our listeners. But the first question that seemed to be on people's minds is the issue of the legality of permanent residence. Is it the law that permanent residents should have their green card or visitors I-94 on them at all times?
Well, I probably will try this one. The law requires that you carry many types of official immigration papers with you all the time. This includes your green card, I-94, employment authorization card, border crossing card, and or other required immigration papers that prove you have registered with the USCIS. If you do not have these papers with you, you could be charged with a misdemeanor crime. The government does not always enforce this law, but could at any time.
Okay, so I am seeing and hearing people deathly afraid. You guys know that these papers are hard to be replaced. And so many people are not walking around with these documents on them. As for the I-94, from what I am understanding, not all I-94s now are in the paper form. Can you clarify or verify that for me?
Okay, so then starting off, Maurice, you want to answer this or you want me to do it?
No, proceed.
Okay, so here, a couple of years ago, USCIS invented a new thing which eliminated the white card, okay? Now, what is most important is to understand the importance of the white card itself.
Uh-huh.
White card proves admission and inspection, okay? So then, because it proves admission and inspection, one cannot lose the white card in the past. If you lose the white card, you'll have to file another type of paperwork to obtain a copy of the white card. It's called an I-102. But now, since a couple of years ago, you actually could trace your arrival and departure record plus your travel history through USCIS website. Now, in this case, the best way to do, Google is your best friend. Just Google I-94 retrieval, or just Google I-94 CBP. CBP stands for Customs and Border Protection. So
okay.
That's it, and then just get it. Mm-hmm.
You know,
free, okay?
That's helpful. That's very helpful to know because, believe me, I've been around for centuries, and the actual meaning of that piece of document was never given to me, and I am sure most people enter the country without even knowing the real meaning of that. So I'm happy for that. Now, a follow-up to that. You know, I mentioned that people are getting a lot of things on social media, and some days you just don't know which is true. And I remember one being sent to me showing a U.S. citizen driving and coming into a roadblock by ICE officials. So my question to you, when I watched that, he was very non-compliant, and of course nobody showed you the end of the video, whether he was beat up or arrested or whatever, but he refused to get out of his car, and he would not answer their question. So here's the other thing, the follow-up to that first question. As a U.S. citizen, am I also having to walk around with something to show that I'm a citizen?
Oh, you say yes. I would say yes. A U.S. citizen should always carry some type of photo identification with them at all times. And you don't have to carry any naturalization or passport with you. Maybe a state ID is.
Okay. All right. So here's I'm going to add a little piece to this. And Leah, you can take this on for me. I have an accent. I've been trying to lose it for the last 40 plus years. I'm a U.S. citizen. I am sure when I am stopped, even if I say I'm a U.S. citizen, somebody's going to ask me to prove something. Can you address that for me?
Okay, so I would like to add that, I just would like to say that I would like to thank my colleague, Mr. Maitland, that invited me to join him in this show. He and I have been working together for how long, Maurice? Like 6-7 years? On other issues?
From the devil was a boy, a very long time. We have the adult high school and the parents having problems and teachers. We help everyone. And we do so as a pro bono basis, courtesy of American Immigration Lawyers Association, a very distinguished bar, national bar that helps people.
Okay. So who is going to pick up that answer for me as having an accent in this day and age and still being a U.S. citizen? What is it that I'm expecting out there?
Okay, first of all, let me add to the other question before. I would like to add to my esteemed colleague's answer. Basically, although it is not required for a U.S. citizen, just like what he said, to carry a card or, you know, your passport. I mean, it's just that, I mean, if you think about it, quite a large percentage of U.S. citizens actually have never had a passport. Some of
them,
right. I've seen clients who have, that's right, that doesn't even have a birth certificate, or their parents or their grandparents has lost it or whatsoever, okay? Now, what is most important is that starting in about like 2004, when the first restriction to identification, the first restriction was actually when certain states started implementing, okay, if someone does not have status, they are not allowed to get a full driver's license. So then, for example, in the state of New York, okay, even if, okay, let's say, even if you are on a visa or something like that, then your New York ID or New York driver license often would say, temporary visitor expires, blah, blah, okay? So then technically, if, you know, I always have this thing in my mind that if, let's say, a police officer actually sees your driver's license and it doesn't say temporary visitor until such and such, then they would assume that, A, you have a good social security number, because that's one of the 9 points requirements in an ID to basically get that driver's license, or B, you have a U.S. birth certificate. So that's one thing. Now, I would like to tie that into the concept of sanctuary city. Now, Governor Cuomo had, and then also Mayor de Blasio had said from the very, very beginning that actually New York is one of the few, one of many sanctuary cities, especially after all the new executive orders and the new policies that was installed by Immigration Customs and Enforcement. So then understanding that if this is a sanctuary city, now please remember that the police is not Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement. Police is not ICE.
Right.
ICE is not police. So although there has been recently another agreement with the police stations, the police force with ICE, especially closer to the border, it's called Section 287 agreement, that a police could be ICE, you know, whatever it is, but it doesn't happen like that to be in New York. So then I guess that's what I want to finish up that question now about the accent. Now, New York is really, it's, I mean, we have everybody here in New York. So, I mean, I understand there is, you know, prejudice. Like, for example, one of my staff members, she is from Central America, and she one day told me after the news on the, on the profiling of Latinos and Latinas in Long Island. I mean, there was news about that. And then she said, Leah, I feel quite bad because I feel quite bad. What if I got pulled over and, you know, just because I'm Latina, they could just ticket me. So then, you know, and then I said, well, you know, you can't really, I mean, don't live like that. Don't live like that. I mean, hold your head high. If you don't do anything wrong, then, you know, just basically, hey, sir, if you don't have a warrant, you have no right to touch me. Hello. You know, so that. But at the same time, you know, by being cooperative, you know, be cooperative, but be respectful. And then, you know, and then, I mean, it's, you know, and then we hope that everybody will try to treat everybody fairly, you know.
And of course, we do know that every state is different. Every state is different. But I think the key thing that you're saying there is you don't need a whole lot for the authorities this day and age to really show their power. It's really about power and control, most of it. But Mr. Maitland, I want to come back to you on the whole issue of, you know, when we have stops and searches and all of that. So the question I want to ask you is that I am hearing that individuals are being searched, that their equipment, their phones, their laptops, and all of that at the airport. Now, what can you tell us about the right to search and what you can and cannot do as an immigrant?
As an immigrant?
Yeah, I mean, if I come in, I'm a green card holder or whatever status I have, but it's also happening to U.S. citizens. What can you really share with what you know happening to people who are being searched? Because I understand once you're on the airport ground, it's almost like you have lost your right. You can't refuse to be searched. And I'm not talking about the regular pat down and, you know, the electronic search and all of that. I'm talking about going through your private properties and stuff.
Well, it depends, because I'm looking at it, say, for example, you have a right to contact an attorney whenever you are approached by a police officer. And so the question then, whether or not the officer can search your house or your apartment or your office, because many immigrants are being searched different places. So here,
right.
At the home, you cannot be searched by police or other law enforcement agents unless you give consent. So unless they have, say, a search warrant, interfering with the search probably won't stop the search, and you might be arrested for it. So this is true. Even the search is not legal. Say, for example, an immigrant has a roommate or a guest can legally consent to the police come and search, and believe that the person has the authority to give consent. So police and law enforcement officer, they would need a warrant to visit your workplace or your home, and so do the immigration officer, which they are not police officers. So when you look at it then, if the agent arrests an immigrant at their home, can they search the house? I would say the area where you are arrested can be searched without a warrant. So wherever they are, but your entire house cannot be searched unless there is a warrant that describes in detail the place to be searched and the people or things to be seized.
So that is at home.
It says then that, what if the agent have a search warrant? You have a right to see the warrant. The warrant must tell in detail the places to be searched and the people or things to be seized. If the police have a warrant, you cannot stop them from entering and search. But you can and should tell them, search only where the warrant authorizes. Ask if you are allowed to watch the search too. If you are allowed to, you should. You should take notes, including names, badges, what agency the officer are from. If others are present, have them act as a witness. Give the information from you and your witness to your lawyer.
Okay. So that is being searched at home. What can you tell us about arriving at the airport? What type of searches are going on there? I mean, do they have the right now without a warrant to search like your cell phone, your laptop? I'm hearing all these things. People are hearing these things. What do you know about that? And Leah can jump in, you know. Did you guys hear my question?
Yes, I did. Maurice, you want me to answer or you want to continue your call? Hello?
Go ahead. I'm waiting.
Okay. So here, when you arrive at the airport, okay, especially when you're coming from overseas, I would say this is an overseas trip because
right.
This is where things became more relevant, okay? Every time someone enters the United States, regardless of whether you are a U.S. citizen or you are a permanent resident or you're a tourist, you actually have to have you have to write in a piece of paper, which is the custom declaration form, and then you have to submit that. Now, if you're a permanent resident or a U.S. citizen, then there will be a specific machine where you could actually respond to those questions directly in the machine. And then either, I mean, it actually triggers out of random. If either you receive a paper with a big X on it or not a big X on it, I think it's, to the best of my knowledge, it is random. But at any rate, so then afterwards, basically they ask you whether you are bringing fruits, plants, vegetables, and things like that. Now, my advice to you is that if you bring anything that could be borderline, you know, not permitted, I want you to basically disclose it, so then if there is a tariff on it, then you know, you are clear. Now, what happens is that this is what your question, however, it's not a border issue, but it's more of a security issue. Now, lately we have been hearing about people that, okay, they are asked by the officers. Okay, I read on the news, like, are you Muslim? Where have you been? Who are you visiting? And things like this. Now, I honestly don't have not spoken to anybody that experienced that myself. But I also read in the news that, you know, there was an Argentinian curator recently that has a gallery in New York City that was removed to Argentina. To the best of my knowledge, and this is how I believe that I would want to practice, immigration, unless you have something that triggers or trips something up, okay, they're not going to go out of their way to interrogate you. They must have something that they believe is going on with you, and then therefore they subject you to secondary inspection. You know, I recently traveled
issue about people's phones are being searched and their laptops, you're suggesting that it could be a secondary search, that something else might have triggered that?
Yes. Okay. Because this is the thing. If, let's say, okay, they suspect you, I mean, most recently, the one that created panic is the travel ban from the 7 Muslim countries, right?
Right.
Actually, this travel ban was revised this afternoon, like about around 12 o'clock, and then they took out Iraq from the list. Now, I don't know, for example, I last traveled, but it was on an Asian airline. So we flew originating from Asia, so the situation might be a little bit different. I mean, I did not transit in, like, countries that belonged to one of the countries on the list. But if, for example, I mean, my suggestion is follow the rules. Be cooperative, but of course, you know your rights.
So, okay, Ms. Attorney Maitland, knowing my right, I can tell you that most people don't know their rights. So, what can you tell individuals who enter the U.S. legally? They have been here for a long time, but they have no current status. That means they may have overstayed their welcome. Okay? Now, what can you tell them in terms of rights? Do they have any rights? What kind of rights can they assert? And if they're deported from this country, can they return at a later date? So it's like a two-part. Let's deal with the assertion of rights first.
Well, it depends on what rights they want to assert.
Well, if the question is, if they're here, they came illegally, which is most immigrants who are now not even undocumented because you had documents. They overstayed their time. And right now, they have no status. Do they have any right to remain? And if they are held by DHS, ICE, or anybody, do they have any rights?
Yes, let me tell you something.
The United States, like any country, must protect its citizens and its borders, and that we cannot just look at things narrow. We have to look that they may be barred for a couple of years, but it all depends. It is up to the judges whether or not they will be barred or can apply for a visa. When they are deported, they may have to apply for a waiver of inadmissibility, that is I-601 application for waiver on grounds of inadmissibility. Assert your rights. If you do not demand your rights, or if you sign papers waiving your rights, the ICE, ICE, may deport you before you see a lawyer or an immigration judge. Talk to a lawyer. Talk to me. Always carry with you the name, telephone number of a lawyer who will take your calls. The immigration laws are hard to understand, and there have been many changes since 9/11, and I think the United States has a right to protect itself. More changes are likely based on today's laws, regulations, and ICE guidelines. Non-citizens usually have the rights listed no matter what your immigration status. And I want to tell you, I think we have the best immigration laws in the world.
Okay, so I'm hearing a couple of things. First, whether you're a non-citizen or a citizen, you need to know your rights. And you need to be careful not to waive those rights. Am I correct on that?
Yes, correct.
Okay, then the other thing I'm hearing is that everybody needs to really have the name and the number of an attorney just in case something happens, and hopefully that person will be able to answer a call from you just in case anything happens. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is that
Bar Association, they're usually very flexible for immigrants because the state bar in most states are very helpful, and they have a strong pro bono section that can help the people. So, believe me, the bar in the States are very flexible towards immigrants.
Okay. And then you did mention that if someone is deported, it doesn't necessarily mean that they can never re-enter the country. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, is there anything else you guys want to add to what you've already said that may need a little bit more clarification?
Yeah, actually, I would like to add a little bit. Whatever Mr. Maitland just said is pretty much exactly how it happens at the border. And then if I could just give you one particular tip. Make sure whatever you do, if you get in trouble at the border, I hope not, okay? Border the airport, okay? Always ask for a copy of the papers that they are about to serve to you to sign, okay?
Okay.
Because it takes a long time for them to be, for us to basically to be able to get it. That's number one. And the number two, sometimes there are options on the top left of the record, which is sometimes if it's from a from different countries, different things apply, such as because whatever is checked on that top page on the left makes a big difference. If either you withdraw your application for admission, which is your application to get admitted into the United States, which means that there is no penalty. You can even come back the next day. However, if it falls into within one of the removal categories, that it would be an expedited removal, and depending on the ground of the expedited removal, you could either be barred for 5 years, 10 years, or for life. If there is fraud, you know, then you will have to waive the fraud with a particular operation of law before you could actually even ever re-enter or obtain a visa. So those are just like the little nitty-gritty things. But the most important thing is whatever you sign, you need a copy, okay?
So that I must thank my colleague for that addition is very outstanding, and I'm grateful for that. However, I want to add one thing. For the disabled person, and person who have medical issues, and they should make sure they get some representation concerning their disability so that they are not being deported and have severe medical problem and cause problem for the new, for their country to take care of their medical issue. Because if they worked in the United States, pay their taxes, and being deported, I believe someone has to stand up for the retired and the disabled persons who are deported.
Okay. So I, as a non-citizen or a legal permanent resident, whoever, I have the right to ask for legal representation if I am held at the airport? Do I have that right?
That's a little bit dicey, okay? Because a lot of the times, the people that who are stuck at the airport at the CBP border, okay, they are granted one opportunity to be able to do any phone call anywhere. And then, you know, the fact that they have, I mean, there are some like like community organizations that approach me that ask me, Leah, do you give out G28s? And, you know, if that's, and then how much would it cost? And then I said, well, G28 is a representation form, which means that an attorney, you know, could represent you or have the power to represent you. But I'm sure that Mr. Maitland will definitely agree. Even if you have an attorney, if the attorney doesn't know what's going on, it doesn't make any difference. You know? So
that, yes, that is true.
That is absolutely true. So then, you know, it's like, so with this particular gentleman, I said, you know, of course everybody does G28, but what's the point? I'm not, you know, I'm sure, and that's why we, Mr. Maitland and I, get along very well. It's like, you know, I mean, money could only go so far, okay? We're not going to sign G28s if we actually, if we don't actually meet with the person and stuff like that. But, you know, literally in an airport, what happens is that, okay, let's say Mr. A or Mr. B got deferred, okay? That's our term for secondary inspection. And then that's where all these questions are asked, right? Typically, they'll say, okay, you can call one person, okay? You can call one person. Then that person could be your husband, your wife, you know, your mother, your father, or an attorney. Now, considering that you have one phone call, instead of asking whether being represented by an attorney is possible or not, I would say get a plan in place before anybody travels. And then, you know, if there are issues, get an attorney to be ready on the phone in case if the need arises.
Okay.
I would say it that way. You know, I would revert, I would revert the question. Because if, if let's say, an appearance of an attorney is required at the terminal, at like, and I'm referring to the terminal because basically airport, sea border, airport, sea port, or land border, they're all the same thing. They're borders.
Right.
You know, the truth of the matter is when an attorney arrives at a terminal, they have to have a, even us, when we have to go to CBP, sometimes we go there to request correction on an I-94 for a client. We need appointments. We can't just walk in. So the short answer, right. I mean, you know, if not, then be prepared to spend, like, how many hours, Maurice? Like a long time,
Right?
Wow. So,
okay.
Sorry to be long.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm going to take a one-minute break, and I will be right back, so don't go anywhere, okay?
Okay.
All righty, guys. I'll be right back.
Hail Moon, faded rose, stretched out from a passion of pain. All alone in a photograph, only passed out color remains. Waken to this mountain horn, feeling sorry for the day she was born. All around her silent sound, hope fading in the sight of a thorn.
Okay, we are back with attorney Maurice Maitland and attorney Leah Sansoso. I keep murdering her name, but she's going to have to pardon me.
Don't worry, I'll live with it.
I hope I won't be deported for mispronouncing your name. Okay, guys, so far we're talking about immigration, what to believe, and we are trying to clarify some of those text messages that are floating around here on social media about what's going on. And, of course, we know that really you don't know what is true and what is not true most of the time. So hopefully as we go through the episode, this series tonight, that you'll walk away with a better understanding. Now, guys, I have been asking you these questions, and I have been hearing some acronyms that I hope you can help us clarify by first telling us what they mean and what they actually do. For example, DHS. What the heck is DHS?
DHS? Well, I would say DHS, whenever you're sending check to the USCIS, do not put DHS. Put Department of Homeland Security. Department of Homeland Security. Because you know what? They prevent terrorism, provide security, monitor borders, enforce and administer immigration laws, and assist with support in the event of a national disaster. And they monitor cybersecurity as well and process immigration forms and fees.
Okay. Okay. And who is ICE? What is ICE?
ICE is cold. Immigration Customs Enforcement.
Apart from being cold, yes.
I would say Immigration Custom Enforcement. They are the frontliners of immigration investigation, preventing terrorism and investigating illegal movement of people and goods, and actually carrying out the investigation physically.
Okay, so where would I normally find or come across an ICE official? Where would I normally run into somebody like that?
Okay, so then if you're at an airport, you know that you are dealing with CBP, which is Customs Borders Protection. When you're inside and you do something wrong, and something wrong meaning that there is an immigration violation, then you would be dealing with ICE. And when you launch an application, let's say someone petitions for you, like let's say father, mother, husband, wife, employer, then you are dealing with USCIS, which is the agency that Mr. Maitland just said. And it's actually a pretty good idea just to do USCIS, just like what he said, because if you try to do DHS, then you will come up with a lot of other things.
Okay. What is DACA? We hear a lot being said, especially people from Mexico mainly. I have a general idea, but can you tell us what's happening? We see a lot on the news where a parent is taking their children to school or church or whatever. The child is a U.S. citizen. I'm going to let you guys explain a little bit more about DACA and what is happening with what rights issue those children have when their parents are detained?
Well, I'll be very brief, and then my colleague will hear what happened. DACA, DACA, Deferred Action for Children Arrival, Deferred Action for Children Arrival, Deferred Action for Children, Childhood Arrival allows certain individuals who meet specific guidelines to request consideration of deferred action, deferred form. USCIS, individual who receive deferred action will not be placed into removal proceeding or deported for a specific period of time unless terminated. If you receive deferred action, you may be eligible for employment authorization and also attend school. Actually, I help some families with their children. They're able to attend university in the United States under deferred action. And that's what we do to help. Because, you know, under 31 years, as of June 15, 2012, and physically in the United States, then and now, currently in school, came to the United States before 16th birth, continues to reside in the United States since June 2007, that person would be eligible to be in the United States.
Okay, so those children who we see, the parents are undocumented or, you know, whatever status they have now, but they're not legal permanent residents, but their children are U.S. citizens. When their parents are being removed, do they... I mean, some of them are young, but what can they do to help their parents? Can they help them at all?
Of course they can. In fact, I have helped a child who was 22, filed for her mother and her father recently, and they received the authorization to work, petition about August last year. And it was approved for them to work, and it's still in progress. I won't call names. However,
they can submit
a petition for an immediate family member when they are 21 years.
Okay. So the days when people come to the country and have children, thinking the children can prevent them from being sent home, that's long over. They have to be 21 years old.
Yes. So do you see how great the United States is? Which other country in the world is that?
Okay. Let's not go down the Make America Great path. Okay. Because there's a lot that is happening. People who are here as U.S. citizens for years are so frightened these days. They don't know what to do and what not to do. And so the next question I'm asking is one that I have heard often. People are being told not to travel outside of the United States in 2017 unless they really need to. Can you really speak to that and tell us what some of the risks are?
Okay, so basically, the Deferred Action Childhood Arrival, one thing that people have to understand with the DACA situation is that DACA does not give status, okay? DACA does not mean that if someone was already out of status or, let's say, they entered illegally, by obtaining work permit based on DACA does not mean they are suddenly in status, okay? So then I think we read on the newspaper, I think it was a couple of days ago, that there was someone with DACA, and then the person was arrested. But then the one thing that you must remember is the person had a DACA that already had expired. So it was, I don't know if you remember, but the person spoke at an immigration rally.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right. So then one of the things that one of the things that's really tragic in the situation is that that person's DACA was actually expired. So, and then she was in the process of renewal. So, you know, considering that the basis of a DACA itself is deferred action, which is the basis is basically a special provision at that was issued by President Obama. So then I would really consider, I would really seriously consider trying to look at other avenues to obtain permanency in the United States. Now, one thing that sometimes could be helpful for people with DACA is that one must understand that actually minor children cannot accrue unlawful presence until they reach the age of 18. So one thing that, so then one thing that could be done, for example, is if someone had already reached like the age of 17 or something, then maybe one ought to consider to revert the status onto another type of visa because they are eligible to do that, you know.
Okay.
So,
now, what what if you're not, barring DACA families and individuals, let's say I am a temporary legal permanent resident or a legal permanent resident, is there anything you are hearing out there that would put people at risk when they leave the country? Because we're hearing a lot of crazy stuff now. We're hearing that people's visas are being taken from them and revoked. I don't know how true is that, but what can you tell people who, for all they know, or they have legal status and have left the country many times and come back? What are you hearing? What can you tell them to sort of alleviate some of the fears?
Okay, so for one thing, I really believe, I mean, for example, in comparison to my own country, I'm from Indonesia. Immigration in the United States, although there is a lot of fear right now going on, immigration in the United States has one of the best systems there is. Of course, if you can compare it to other countries, I mean, I'm from a developing country, so I know how immigration in my country works. Now, the others, I'm not saying bad things about it, but it's like at least we are here in the States. It's a lot more, I would say, everything has a there is a system working, there is a this working, there is a that working. Now, in my opinion, okay, we don't hear the whole story, and I know that a lot of people may not agree with me, but I'm pretty sure
no,
that
I
you
agree.
Did not hear
I
the
really
whole story.
Think that's happening.
So, like, for example, if someone, if the person had been arrested for whatever reason, okay, so then, you know, for then it would be very common if the person get deferred. Now, a different story would be if, let's say, I mean, we read a lot of stories about people that belong to one of the countries that was listed in the initial travel ban, okay?
Right.
And then, you know, they somehow, when they landed, you know, CBP has no, you know, no authority to admit them. And then some of them get their visas canceled and things like that. And then when the temporary injunction came in, and then you know, they have they were able to undo that and things like that. Now, what I would say is that be vigilant, be prepared, be honest. The most important thing is to be honest. Okay. So then, I mean, that would be the best thing. I mean, what do you think, Maurice? I mean, I don't have a better advice, but to say that.
So I don't have to be afraid. I don't have to be afraid when I leave this country. My sisters, my brothers, all my friends, we don't have to be afraid if we, I mean, we know crazy things happen. But as far as you know, there is no unusual risk that people are facing if they leave the country and they are in legal status.
That's correct.
Okay.
It's correct. For example, I would add that if you have overstayed, then it is not advisable that you travel unless you are back in status. Risks include difficulty returning to the United States, being barred from entering the United States,
for several years if you are illegal or overstayed.
Okay. Okay. Oh, my goodness. There is a lot to learn. Now, there is someone asked me this question, and I want to put that out there. We have some individuals who are, I don't know if you call them out of status, but the only thing that they have that is in status is like a work, you know, the employment authorization document, the work permit. That's the only thing that they have. So are those people at risk of deportation based on what's going on now?
Okay, so then, first of all, there are like about 40 categories on work permits. So, for example, the most common ones are for people who are, for example, that applied for a DACA. They have a specific code for that. If, let's say, and then I explained just now, so then if you have a work permit under DACA, does not mean that you have legal status in this country, right?
Right.
All right, go ahead.
And then, right, so then the second thing is that if, let's say, you have an application pending, for example, if you have a green card application pending, okay, then it all comes back to whether that application was meritorious. So then if the application is meritorious and you don't, and then because of that underlying application, you have the rights to stay in the United States, then obviously no one is going to bother you. However, if you just for the heck of it launched, and I have seen this, sadly, I have seen like notarios and bad people like that just sell, quote-unquote, a work permit application, okay? And the people were like super happy when they got their fingerprint notice and such, okay, thinking that they are going to get a work permit. Big wrong, because the thing is that if the existence of a work permit does not mean that you have legal status, again. So that, you know, could you be apprehended when you have a work permit? The question, you know, the answer is pretty much self-explanatory. Yes, you could, because, you know, because it all goes back to the merits, to the thrust of the case.
Right, right. Wow, 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 wow. Okay, guys, I'm coming to the point now where we are, you know, going to open up for questions. I have people listening, and I have one more question, and then I'm going to open up unless you guys have something else you need to clarify. But here is one question that somebody asked, and again, I will give you the opportunity to tell people how to get in contact with you if they were to need your services in the future. But here's this one final question from me. Someone wants to know, they have legal permanent resident status, and they want to apply for U.S. citizenship, but they owe the IRS some money. Does that prevent them from applying for their citizenship?
Well, that's a very, very important question. And believe me, I would say, how dare you owe money and want to apply to be a citizenship? We need good people who pay their taxes.
Why not?
Yeah,
why not?
What I'm saying, though, if you fail to pay taxes, you will not be eligible for citizenship. However,
but you
if you
know,
are in the process, if you're in the process of paying taxes and are able to provide documentation, including payment plan, with the IRS, this will help. This is the same for child support. Court order, child support payments must be current. They must be current.
Wow. So if I owe the IRS, regardless of what the reason is, if I don't have a payment arrangement, forget it, right?
Yeah, I think that person shouldn't even apply.
You know, the threshold of that...
They shouldn't even apply.
Of that is actually good
law. Even Christ said, give Caesar to what belongs to him.
Come on. No, seriously. Should the person because that's the only thing you people owe taxes. Your president hasn't even shown his tax return. What are you talking about? Listen, should the person then go to the IRS and make arrangement? Would that be a better approach?
Actually, that's exactly what I just said. The government is very flexible. So if they go to IRS office and make payment plan, that would be very good.
Okay. And forget child support. So all that money I owe, I can forget it, right?
Child support, well, any man who don't pay their child support, I don't think they should actually, it should be criminal more than civil.
Oh, stop
because
it. What about the woman? Man,
no. The woman?
I bet
that's for another forum. Not tonight's forum. Tonight we want to make sure the writing is done. Child support is paid by the man.
Okay.
Next forum
and the woman. And the woman. Okay. All right, guys. I think we have covered most of the questions that people have asked, but I want to now open up the airwaves. If anyone who is listening has a specific question that you think our guest can answer, this is your opportunity now to ask that question. Hello, anybody out there with a question? You know, they're all keeping quiet. You know, I'm not going to ask your names, but this is your opportunity. Other than that, you're going to have to get in the office and pay big bucks to get the answers you're getting now. So this is your chance. Anyone have a question? Anyone? Well, I guess we have answered everybody's question then. Anyone has a question? Hello? Okay. All right, so I'm back with you guys. Any parting thoughts that you want to share with people who have to go through these chaotic times? Mr. Maitland?
Well, I'll just urge them to follow the law and be good citizens, pay their taxes, and do the right thing. Because
okay.
I believe the government, we still, I would say, very well follow the rule of law. And I believe if citizens do the right thing and non-citizens, we'll have a better place to live.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I do hear you, but I think we need to also be realistic with the current tone and tension that is out there. I have heard and read people who have been doing the right thing. They are legal residents of this country. They are citizens of this country, and yet they get caught up in all the confusion. So it's not always people who are doing the wrong thing who get caught up in this. And this is why I wanted you guys to come on, because we want to at least be able to separate facts from fiction. So I do appreciate that comment. Now, Attorney Leah, what would you tell someone listening about the current tone of immigration and risk and what you advise them to do? Hello, did I miss somebody?
No, still here. I actually don't have really much last words, but for Amido, my excellent colleague just covered all the grounds.
Okay. Well, So I want to thank you guys for coming on this evening and for sharing your expertise with us. And I want you to take the next few minutes, again, to tell our listeners about your practice, what you do, how they can reach you if they have issues that they may need to address in the future. Can you go ahead and take turns and tell us again?
I'd like to put ladies first, madam.
Oh, okay. Leah Suntoso, 347-272-8288. It is, again, 347-272-8288. It is best to send me a text because I'm always in court in the morning except Fridays.
Mm-hmm. And here's the question. Do either of you practice across state line?
Immigration law is federal law, so we technically
can
practice
anywhere
in the United States.
Yes,
okay.
Immigration and Social Security. Those are two vital for, especially in this time, the baby boomers, immigration and Social Security. We can do so nationally. In fact, I was in Florida recently.
For Social Security. Some other time I'll get you back for Social Security. So you want to go ahead and share your information again with our listeners?
Sure. My telephone number is 347-346-0749, and you notice that it's pretty close to my learned colleague. 347-346-0749, Maurice Maitland, and my website is mdmlawyer.com, mdmlawyer.com.
Okay.
Thank you very much again, Madam Dr. Rose, for your kindness in allowing us to share our skill with our neighbors.
I appreciate you accepting my invitation, and I know that some other time in the future I'll have you back on if it's okay with you to do Social Security for us, because there's a lot of people who need to learn more about that.
Yes, they need to know their rights.
Right. So thank you again, and guys, I will
thank you, Dr.
see
Rose.
You. Thank you for coming on too. Hope to see more people again next week, this time when we hopefully will have another guest here on the show. So,
and thank you, Maurice, for the opportunity to do this show together with you. It's always a pleasure.
Yes,
okay.
And you're invited to attend to the high school, the Adventist High School in Manhattan soon, too, with your skill. The parents are looking forward for you again.
Okay, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll see you again. We'll talk with you again sometime.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
God bless you all.
Okay.